Welcome to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, President of the Ohio Christian Alliance. Stay tuned for an analysis and conversation about the issues that matter most to you and your family. Here now with this week's edition of News in Focus is Chris Long.
And good afternoon, and we're glad that you've joined us for this edition of News in Focus. On the program today, we're going to have our good friend Bill Fetter from the American Minute, who's going to be sharing with us about the history of Islam and, in fact, how that is affecting the nation of Iraq and the whole Middle East today in Syria and Iraq and Egypt. And Bill has got some great insights of the history of Islam. He's written a book, What Every American Needs to Know About the Quran. Bill will be with us in just a few minutes, but I want to give everyone an update. If you've been listening to this program for the last 3 weeks, you know that we have been covering the crisis in Iraq of the Iraqi Christians that have been under assault from the Islamic State, also known as ISIS. This is an army that has been moving from Syria into the borders of northern Iraq, and in their wake, they have left atrocities. In fact, they have tried to commit a genocide against Christians, Shiite Muslims, and Yazidis, which is a minority sect there in northern Iraq. And the pictures and imagery coming out of Iraq, of course, are ghastly and unbelievable in today's world. And with that, there was a report yesterday of a U.S. journalist that had been captured back in 2012 while covering the civil war of Syria. And his family's been praying for him and advocating for his release. And it was shown on a video by the Islamic State, ISIS, that the man was beheaded. And he was a U.S. journalist. And they made a threat to Mr. Obama and to the United States. And they want us to quit our airstrikes and military action against them in the field. And this poor man was executed by being beheaded. Folks, that's what we're dealing with here with the Islamic State and the Islamists, the fanaticals. And this is just the tip of the iceberg of the atrocities they have committed in northern Iraq as stories are emerging of those who have been persecuted and executed for their faith, martyred for their faith. We are working with Senator Rob Portman's office and members of the U.S. Senate and Congress to advocate on behalf of these now refugees who have had to leave the Christian villages in northern Iraq and have had to leave the city of Mosul, which is also known as ancient Nineveh. There has been some good news in regard to that. ISIS has been pushed back by the Kurdish forces, who are now resupplied with French arms and also with military hardware that the United States has provided, although it's been small arms. And even with that, the Kurdish forces, now with some new recruits of Christian ranks who have joined them, have actually made some headway against ISIS, retaking some towns. And if you go to our Facebook page of the Ohio Christian Alliance, you'll see a video in which this last weekend, one of the Christian towns was Alklosh, was actually retaken, and a group of Christians went to the church in the center of town and rang the church bells. And I tell you, it just that really blessed us all when we consider some of the imagery of those that were up on the mountain and trying to get to safety, those who have had to leave everything because an Islamic caliphate was announced, and that is pay a heavy fine, convert to Islam, or face execution. And of course, some were not able to leave, and they actually were martyred for their faith. These are the stories that are coming out of northern Iraq in recent weeks, and we're reporting to you here on the Ohio Christian Alliance broadcast News in Focus. We've had on the program Senator Portman and a young lady, Zina Aziz, who is an Iraqi Christian who now resides in Columbus, Ohio with her family, and she is a U.S. citizen, and she was registered to vote this year by the Ohio Christian Alliance. It's one of the things we do is register people to vote, and she was happily able to cast her first ballot in the May primary. She was on our broadcast, and you can listen to that previous broadcast by going to our website at ohioca.org, and you can hear all of our archived messages. Last week, we had a couple of young men who make Detroit, Michigan their home, but they are former Iraqi citizens, now U.S. citizens, that advocate on behalf of those Christians, Chaldean Christians back in Iraq. So we are thankful that there are those who have made their way to safety, although they are in refugee camps and their status is unknown. Many of them have been stripped of all wealth, all personal belongings, even identification. They just literally came out with the shirts on their back. And so their future is unknown. So the Kurdish forces are making some gains, and Washington is yet to disclose, the president, the administration has yet to disclose what the long-term goal is here. But obviously, I think for the new Iraqi government and the coalition forces of the previous Gulf War is to eradicate ISIS from Iraq altogether. That would be in the best interest, and that there would be peace and harmony in the land. We want you to join us and pray for that. Is Bill on the line with us? Bill Federer is joining us today, and Bill's got a great insight in regard to all this. And please welcome to the program, Mr. Bill Federer. Okay, I think we're going to have Bill here in a minute. But anyways, I think we lost Bill, but Bill will be with us, and with that, he'll be talking about how, and what was interesting, a lot of Christians in Iraq have been telling us that there has been some confusion pertaining to the history of Islam, because if you're in an Islamic country, you don't have the opportunity to know about the history of Islam. And what Bill has done is he's taught about the history of Islam throughout the ages and its interaction with Christianity. And it's not a very pleasing picture. That's probably why Muslim countries and Muslim leadership do not want the history to be known, because it is a bloody history and a violent history throughout the time in which Islam has been propagated throughout the many nations. And with that, we're going to go back to Bill Federer. Bill, you there?
Chris, great to be with you.
Good. I'm glad you're with us. We were just talking to listeners about how the history of Islam is not been taught to people who are in Islamic states. They get a very rosy picture, as it were. In fact, when I talk to these Iraqi Christians, they were not aware of some of the things that you teach in your seminars on the history of Islam, simply because it was not made available to them.
Well, in many Muslim countries, it is illegal for non-Muslims to study the Quran and to study Islamic history. Why? Because of what you pointed out. You can show inconsistencies, you can show embarrassing behaviors, and that obviously is not something that wants to be known. In Muslim countries, it is a crime punishable by death to insult Islam. And so if you bring out the history, that could put it in a negative light. It's the death penalty. But basically, the history of Islam is being relived out for us today in Iraq. And it's an unfortunate situation, but there's 1,400 years of track record for anybody that cares to look at it, which I put together in my book called What Every American Needs to Know About the Quran. But you can research it yourself. You can look up Tamerlane. He killed 17 million people, left pyramids of skulls. He didn't just kill Christians. He killed Hindus, went down to Delhi, India, and told his men to come back with a skull in every hand. You can go back and read about Serbia. When the Muslims first invaded Serbia, they dug up the bones of Saint Sava. He's one of the founders of Serbia, and they trashed him, very similar to the way that the Muslims in Iraq destroyed the tomb of Jonah, a 2,500-year-old tomb that had existed, and they destroyed it, very similar to the way they were destroying the bones of St. Peter and St. Paul. In 846 A.D., the Muslims, 10,000 of them, invaded Rome, Italy, and they trashed the Basilica of St. Peter's with the bones of St. Peter. That's why it's hard to identify them nowadays. And then they had gone to Egypt, and they trashed the Coptic Egyptian culture, and the bones of St. Mark, who was the founder of the Christian movement in Egypt. They had to smuggle the bones of St. Mark out of Egypt by packing them under pork. But we see that this trend continues. But Serbia, the Archbishop of Serbia, led over 100,000 Serbians to migrate out of Serbia to Austria. And it's called the Great Serbian Migration. And so, again, we see these Christians immigrating out of Iraq. Well, that's what happened years ago. It was in the year 1594, the Great Serbian Migration. And so this is a history that...
That was in advance of the Islamic advance as well, wasn't it? That these folks were fleeing and fleeing for their lives. Is that right?
Well, there was. And just like there's a cry to the West to intervene, they cried to the West. And the Habsburg Prince, which was the Austrian Habsburg Empire, the Habsburg Prince Eugene of Savoy led the Holy League to counterattack. And they battled the Muslims at Zenta, Z-E-N-T-A, and their 500 of the Eugene of Savoy's men were killed, but over 30,000 Muslims were killed. So this is took place on September 11th, 1697, one of the great defeats of the Turkish Muslims. And someone who fought with Eugene of Savoy shortly thereafter was James Oglethorpe, and a young soldier from England, and afterwards he went back to England and later founded a colony in the New World named Georgia. And so his secretary was Charles Wesley, who went on to write a lot of hymns, and his brother was John Wesley, who started the movement called Methodism. Matter of fact, John Wesley had a few things to say about Islam in his book titled The Doctrine of Original Sin. John Wesley said, "Ever since the religion of Islam appeared in the world, the espousers of it have been as wolves and tigers to all other nations, rending and tearing all that fell into their merciless paws, grinding them with their iron teeth, numberless cities razed from the foundations, and only their name remaining." He goes on to say that many countries, which were once as the garden of God, are now desolate wilderness, and that so many once numerous and powerful nations are vanished from the earth. Such was and is to this day the rage, the fury, the revenge of these destroyers of mankind. Again, that is John Wesley in the book The Doctrine of Original Sin, describing Islam.
And you know, Bill, they really don't like this history that is not very pleasing to be known publicly. A lot of Muslims do not like to be shamed like this of what has been the history of their religion. In fact, you mentioned when they went into Egypt, which was a large Christian population after the early church in the first few hundred years, AD, rather, and then, you know, the Library of Alexander, Alexandria has been destroyed by the Muslims. They destroy antiquities everywhere they go. When we saw the so-called Muslim Spring in Egypt, there was one mullah that was calling for the destruction of the pyramids themselves and the Sphinx. And then there was break-ins into the National Museum there in Cairo, and there were those who had to rescue. Thankfully, the damage was minimal, but these are priceless antiquities that are a wonder to the world and helpful in research and knowledge. And unfortunately, the world lost the Library of Alexandria, and many believe it was the Muslims who burned it to the ground. And when we see ISIS everywhere, they're moving in northern Iraq, which is a place rich in tradition. In fact, these Chaldean Christians, when we talk about that they were converted by the Apostle Thomas, who came and preached the gospel to them in the first century, they said, "We don't go back 2,000 years. We go back 6,500 years to the time in which Abraham left the Ur of Chaldees." And so they talk about the richness of their history. You already talked about in what it was ancient Nineveh, now Mosul. The prophet Jonah was buried there, and ISIS unearthed his bones from the grave and destroyed them. The prophet Nahum was buried in one of the villages nearby. In fact, a gentleman we had on the program last week said his wife was from that town. And of course, we read the scriptures from Nahum chapter 1, and we pray it for the Iraqi Christians today. The Lord is good, a stronghold in the day of trouble, and he knoweth them that trust in him. And that's our prayer for these people. But, Bill, you've done such a service to so many. You've done a lecture series across the country. In fact, even officials at the Pentagon have had you come in over the years and brief them with your knowledge on Islamic history and the history of Islam. The book, again, What Every American Needs to Know About Quran. How do people get a hold of that?
Well, thank you, Chris. My website is AmericanMinute.com, AmericanMinute.com, and I also send out a free daily email called The American Minute. And I have two DVDs on the subject. One is called Political Islam's War on the West. And I use the word political because there is religious Islam, there's political Islam, and then there's military Islam. Religious is the way Muhammad was when he was in the pagan city of Mecca for the first 12 years of his religion. And he only made 70 converts in 12 years. The people in Mecca were mostly pagan. And when Muhammad's rich uncle, Abu Talib, died, he was Muhammad's protector. He was a very influential pagan leader in Mecca. When Abu Talib died, Muhammad lost his protector, and the people of Mecca decided this was their opportunity to chase him out of town for disturbing the peace. And so in the year 622 AD, Muhammad was chased out of Mecca. He tries to go to a city called Al-Taif, and they pelt him with stones. He finally goes to a Jewish city called Medina. And there's three Jewish tribes that control Medina. They're nice enough to let him in as a religious refugee, as an immigrant. He comes in. He presents his faith to the Jews, but they reject him. And they tell him that he is not a prophet in the line of their Jewish prophets. So Muhammad goes into the pagan minority neighborhoods in Medina, and he begins to try to make converts among them. He actually changes the direction of bowing from Jerusalem to Mecca. That's right. Originally, Muhammad had his followers bowing toward Jerusalem, where Solomon said, if your people are scattered and they bowed toward this place, or if Daniel, you know, would open the window and he'd pray toward Jerusalem. And so this was the tradition. But when the Jews rejected Muhammad, he changed the direction of bowing from the Jewish city of Jerusalem to Mecca. And so Muhammad begins to get a following of pagans in this Jewish city of Medina. A few of the pagan leaders resist, and they mysteriously get assassinated, and the rest of the pagan leaders figure they better join Muhammad. And so now, with his following, he goes back to the Jewish leaders, and he has some clout, so to speak. And so the Jews make a treaty with Muhammad, and then we see that Muhammad is now a political leader in addition to being a religious leader.
Bill, hold it right there. That's a great intro. Bill's going to be with us for the full hour. We're going to take a quick break right now. We're going to be back with Bill Fetter from the American Minute talking about the history of Islam. You don't want to miss this. We'll be right back.
I remember the moment.
I'll never forget that moment.
As long as I live.
I realized it was a moment.
It was a moment that changed my life.
The moment the snow started to fall, I knew.
That as a citizen soldier in the National Guard, I was going to have to be ready at a moment's notice.
Some were calling it the snowstorm of the century.
Cars and tractor trailers were stranded on the interstate in 8-foot drifts.
It was still at the heart of the storm when we arrived in a convoy of Humvees. Could barely see our hands in front of our faces.
These people had been there for hours, all scared and on the verge of hypothermia.
We dug them out, got them home safely.
That's what we train for. Moments like this.
When our communities need us.
In the Guard, you serve your community as well as your country while you work or attend college full time. In return, you'll gain career skills and receive benefits that can help you pay for college. Take a moment to learn more. Go to NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Ohio National Guard, aired by the Ohio Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Who's looking out for seniors today? It's not the AARP. AARP worked overtime to help pass Obamacare, the legislation that cut over $700 billion from Medicare. And AARP supports the death tax, which can rob families of over half their savings due to the death of a loved one. Seniors know that AARP would rather make millions peddling insurance products than support the policies that actually help America's elderly. That's why America's seniors count on the 60 Plus Association. For more than 20 years, 60 Plus has been fighting for the seniors that AARP has left behind. 60 Plus fought against Obamacare and continues to fight every day for its repeal in Washington. And 60 Plus is the leading national organization working to repeal the death tax once and for all so that families can pass down their businesses and farms to the next generation, not the IRS. Stand up for your values. Join 60 Plus today. Visit 60plus.org or call 703-807-2070. This message paid for and authorized by the 60 Plus Association.
We're back with Bill Fetter, and we're continuing our discussion on the history of Islam. Bill, you just left off right there where Muhammad was just getting started and in Medina, and let's continue there.
And so Muhammad is in the city of Medina, and he has his followers being chased out of Mecca because they're getting confrontational, the way some of his followers are today. And so they get chased out of town. And Muhammad permits his followers to rob the caravans headed to Mecca in retaliation for the Meccans chasing them out of town. And so this is where Muhammad departs from following the peaceful example of Jesus, where Jesus said, if they take your coat, give them your shirt. Muhammad said, if they take your house, you retaliate and take their caravan. And it's this victimhood thing that you're the victim, that they were intolerant of your religion, therefore you're justified in attacking back. And so this victimhood is a key understanding to seeing how Islam spread, this idea that if you're not tolerant of us, then we can attack you. And so the Meccans, they send 1,000 soldiers to protect their caravan as it comes from Cairo down to Mecca. And Muhammad, with 300 warriors, attacks and defeats 1,000 of the Meccans at the Battle of Badr, B-A-D-R, Badr, in the year 624 A.D. And so this amazing victory, having been outnumbered 3-1, convinces Muhammad that he is supposed to be a military leader. And he fights in 66 battles in the next 8 years before he dies. He even used the catapult when he attacked a city called Al-Ta'if. And when he was told the catapult was killing women and children, Muhammad's response was, they are among them. So they got to be killed too. So suicide bombers today say it is okay to kill innocent women and children to advance Islam because Muhammad did at Al-Ta'if when he used the catapults. And since Muhammad is the perfect Muslim, Muslims today that want to be better Muslims, they want to be like Muhammad religiously, politically, and militarily. And so we see it's a threefold system, and I use the acronym RPM, very similar to your car, revolutions per minute. Well, this is RPM, religious, political, military. And so those that are following Muhammad today closely, they gravitate from following him religiously to following him politically to following him militarily.
Yes.
Now, Muhammad turned out to be a brilliant military leader, primarily because he was creative, unconventional, unpredictable. In other words, he did not play by the rules of warfare in that the Arab had observed for centuries. For example, there was a month off where these pagans agreed not to fight. It was their pilgrimage month when they would set aside their differences and go to Mecca and worship all their different pagan gods. In the Kaaba, that square building in Mecca, it housed 360 different pagan gods, including a rock they thought had fallen from the moon, where they worshiped Hubal, the moon god, and the pagans would kiss this black rock and walk around this rock and bow to this rock. And so, anyway, so Muhammad gets verses from his Allah to attack the caravans during this Ramadan pilgrimage month, and he comes away with a lot of booty. Matter of fact, he got a whole chapter of the Quran on how to distribute booty from robbing caravans. It's Surah 8, Chapter 8. He gets a fifth of the booty. And so in the year 627 A.D., the Meccans send 10,000 soldiers to stop Muhammad from robbing their caravans. It's a coalition force of nomads and Jews and different tribes. And Muhammad, his version of roadside bombs and IEDs to stop their cavalry was he dug potholes and trenches all around the city of Medina, which rendered the superior cavalry of the Meccans useless. You can't charge your horses and camels across a field full of potholes and trenches. They'll break their legs. You know, you're being shot at from the walls, and you're trying to watch out for these holes. And so it throws off the battle strategy. And then Muhammad goes to some of the tribes at nighttime, and he bribes them, and they slip away from the fight. He goes to some of the other tribes at nighttime, and he threatens them, and they slip away in the night. Sort of the Chicago politics, the bribe or the bullet, the silver or the lead. And then it gets freezing cold for a week. and the rest of the Meccans decide to bring their troops home. They lose heart. They retreat. And does Muhammad become peaceful now that they've retreated? No, he's emboldened that his enemies were cowards and unable to subdue him. And so he goes back into the city of Medina, and those three Jewish tribes that had let Muhammad in 5 years earlier when he was a religious immigrant, he gets offended at one of the tribes, confiscates their property, and chases them out of town. Now, he was astute enough politically to pick on the one the other two didn't like. And so they sort of stood by idly while he did this to them. And then he picks on the weaker of the last two tribes, and the big tribe sort of stands around and lets it happen because it always felt the other one was a rival and sort of used the political differences. This actually set a precedent in Islam called hudna, which means when you are weak, you make treaties until you get strong enough to disregard them. And so here we are twisting Israel's arm to make a treaty with the surrounding Muslim countries. And their concept of treaty is just a ceasefire to restock missiles. And so the third Jewish tribe in Medina, Muhammad bottles them in their neighborhood for 25 days. When they finally surrender, he brings them into the market and chops off the heads of the men, 600 or 700 of them. And then he sells the women and children into slavery.
That's exactly
what the Boko Haram are doing and the ISIS are doing.
That's what ISIS is doing in northern Iraq, Bill. These are the official reports that have come back where they've killed the men and they sold the women and children into slavery. And it's happening again. And, I mean, this is modern day. And this is the prayers we have for the people in northern Iraq, the Christians that are there and the religious minorities. And we pray for them to receive help from the Western powers by military and humanitarian aid, and that is continuing. There's been some good news, but this is the kind of atrocities these folks are facing. But it's based upon Islam that's had a history of this. Is that right?
Right. Since Muhammad is the perfect Muslim, those that want to be better Muslims, more devout Muslims, they want to follow his example religiously, politically, and militarily. And so within 5 years of Muhammad immigrating into the Jewish city of Medina, there is not a Jew left in the city of Medina. They've been chased out, killed, or enslaved. And within 5 years of Muhammad's death, every pre-existing culture in Arabia is wiped out. And we see that when you spread something with the sword, you kill people, but what do you do with the ones who surrender? You sell them. And so the Muslims have the slave trade. And they enslaved an estimated 180 million Africans, castrate the men, make them eunuchs, sell the women to the sex traffic. Then they enslaved over a million Europeans. There were entire Catholic orders in Europe during the Middle Ages called the Trinitarians. The head of the order was called the Ransomer. And they would collect alms and donations and go under a white flag to North Africa to get your friend back who was captured from a Greek island or an Italian coast or one of the pilgrim ships that pilgrims in 1620 founded Plymouth, Massachusetts. Well, in 1625, William Bradford writes that they sent a couple ships back to England with 800 pounds of beaver skins to trade, and the Muslims captured the ship, one of the ships, in the English Channel, took it to Morocco, and sold the crew into slavery. And then around 1630, the Muslims captured an entire Irish village, the stolen village of Baltimore, Ireland. They came up at nighttime, killed a few, and rounded up the whole rest of the town and took them to Morocco, sold them into slavery. Only two ever made it back to Ireland. And then, around the same time, they captured 400 from Reykjavik, Iceland. They come up with their Muslim ships, and they storm these little seacoast villages, and then they round them up and carry them away. The king of Norway had to send a fleet down there to rescue some girl who was the daughter of some royalty. But we see that this trend continued. And so the different countries in Europe would have Catholic orders, like the Trinitarians, the Methodians, and they were religious orders that would go around Europe collecting alms and donations. And the head of the order was called the Ransomer. And they would go under a white flag to North Africa to try to ransom your friend back who was captured from an Italian coast. There's whole areas of the Italian coast where there was not a woman of childbearing age for a generation because the Muslims would carry them all away. and they would take the church bells down and melt them into cannons. And so we see that this continued until the European countries decided to pay an annual tribute. And so Sweden, England, France, Spain would pay millions of dollars equivalent a year to these Muslim pirates to leave their country's ships alone. So very similar to the way that Muhammad robbed the caravans, these were Muslim ships robbing. And so when America broke from Britain because of our independence, we were no longer covered by the British tribute payments.
And so what we saw in recent years were the Somali pirates, and they were taking freighters and ocean-going freighters anywhere near the Somali coast. Again, the same kind of piracy was being enacted again. I mean, you know, it's like history comes to life here, Bill.
Yeah, Tom Hanks even did a movie about it. I mean, again, this goes back to the example that Muhammad set from robbing caravans. But finally, Thomas Jefferson gets fed up and he sends in our Marines. And that's where we get the Marine anthem, from the halls of Montezuma to the shores of Tripoli. But it's important for us to understand that a peaceful Muslim is one who has backslidden from following the example of Muhammad. Some of the Muslims, Islam is really the most violent where it's expanding. And the areas that it conquers, once it is conquered and gotten rid of all those that would challenge its authority, there's no violence for a while. The Christians would be relegated to a second-class dhimmi status where they would have to ransom their life once a year. And if they ever ran out of money, they had to be sold into slavery. And so we see that last month, the Muslim leader of ISIL has decided that the Christians had to pay the jizya tax or convert or die.
That's right. The caliphate that was announced in Mosul and all those towns and villages in northern Iraq, and that's what's created this wave of refugees going into Kurdistan now and parts of Turkey and even some trying to make their way into Syria, anywhere to get away from ISIS. And that's what we've been reporting on this program. You're listening to News in Focus. I'm your host, Chris Long. And with me on the phone today is Bill Fetter from the American Minute. And we're continuing to talk about the history of Islam. You can also hear our broadcasts at our website at ohioca.org. And we're going to give you information as to where you can obtain some of Bill's teaching tapes and books. And also he is seen on the TCT Christian Television Network. What time is the program air? Is it different times in the time zones, Bill?
I think it is around 5:30 a.m. and maybe 10:30 a.m. Eastern. They change it from time to time, but
check your local listings. That's right. Check your local listings. And, of course, you can sign up for Bill's email that he sends out every day in your inbox called The American Minute. And, in fact, Bill was very instrumental in inspiring the D-Day Landing Prayer Act that passed Congress this last month unanimously by the U.S. Senate in 370-12 in the U.S. House and signed by the President on June 30th. Of course, a legislative project of the Ohio Christian Alliance, but inspired by the American Minute 8 years earlier, as Bill sends those out every day in your inbox. And I was reading it one day that we're talking about FDR's prayer, and in a future program, we're going to talk a lot about that. But today we're talking about the history of Islam and how, unfortunately, ancient history has come to life on the fields in Syria, Egypt, and now in northern Iraq. And we need to pray for our Christians who are facing persecution in the face of this terror and barbarism of what is known as radical Islam. Bill, continue with us here. We got about 10 more minutes for a break, and we're going to go to the top of the hour. But tell us more about the history of Islam as we go into the Middle Ages with Europe, because there was a huge battle. I think it was the Battle of Lepanto.
Right. Well, lots of huge battles, but following the timeline, we have Muhammad born in 570 A.D., 610 A.D., he starts his faith, and 622 is when he's chased out of Mecca to Medina, and he dies in 632. And so he is followed by the rightly guided caliphs. So these are the ones who were his generals, first caliph was Caliph Umar, Caliph Abu Bakr, who had the Ridda Wars, R-I-D-D-A, Ridda Apostasy Wars. So when Muhammad died, a bunch of Muslims wanted to leave, and Abu Bakr said, "You can't leave," and he killed thousands. Then you had Caliph Umar, and he conquers huge areas and goes all the way to Jerusalem. And then you have Caliph Uthman, and he's the one who compiled the Quran. And then you have Caliph Ali, who was Muhammad's son-in-law, married Fatima, and had the one male descendant, Hussein, and who was later assassinated. And so the Sunnis basically follow the followers of Caliph Abu Bakr, who was Muhammad's father-in-law. Muhammad had lots of father-in-laws because he had lots of wives, but Abu Bakr was the father of Muhammad's favorite wife, Aisha. She was the six-year-old that Muhammad married, consummated at 9 years old.
Oh, Lord.
And so 90% of Muslims are Sunni, and they follow Abu Bakr, who is the founder, the first caliph after Muhammad died. The Shiites, 10% of Muslims are Shiite, mostly in Iran, and they follow Muhammad's son-in-law, Ali. It's actually Shi Ali, and it got shortened to Shiite, but it's Shi Ali, party of Ali. And so the fighting between the Shiites and the Sunnis is the fighting between the followers of the son-in-law versus the followers of the father-in-law. It's all a family thing. And the different caliphs were killed and murdered and poisoned and stabbed. And you read the history of the rightly guided caliphs, and it reads like the mafia or the Cosa Nostra. I mean, this is a family all related to Muhammad, either as father-in-laws or son-in-laws or his daughter Fatima. That she started the Fatimid dynasty because she, for a while, held power. But they're all related to Muhammad. This was all this one family. And they conquered from the Persian Gulf to the Atlantic Ocean. And it was the largest political, military empire in the world at the time. And it was lightning fast. Now, it didn't help any that the Christians at that time had embraced their version of separation of church and state. It was a hyper-pietism. So in the century before Muhammad, the first three centuries of Christianity, there are 10 major persecutions. Christians are thrown to the lions. The next century, Constantine converts to Christianity, but then all these heresies start, and they have to bring all these different councils to try to settle all these different heresies. The next century, they embrace this hyper-pietism, which was, if you convert and really truly become a Christian, you're expected to give away all your money and live in a cave, or give away all your money and build a platform in the desert so you can bake in the sun, thinking you're denying your flesh and getting holier. You give away all your money and live in a monastery. In other words, it was the separation of the church from the world, separation of church and state. And so as a result, Islam, when it came along the scene, boom, it just fell like a bunch of dominoes. So all of North Africa, Morocco, Algiers, Tunisia, Libya, there were 250 Catholic dioceses, and they just fell almost instantly. And then the Muslims crossed the Strait of Gibraltar into Spain. Now, Spain was Visigothic Christian, and there were some different Visigothic kingdoms that were fighting each other. And one of them had the bright idea to go across the Strait of Gibraltar and gather 80,000 of these Muslim warriors and bring them across to help their side. Well, if the Muslims come across and say, "Well, shoot, while we're here, let's just conquer everything." And the Muslims fought on horseback, Arabian horses, and they had in the stirrup. You know, you put your feet in the stirrup when you ride a horse? That stirrup was invented by the Mongolian nomads over by China. They had little short horses, and they'd tie a rope around the horse and leave two loops hanging for their big toes because they would ride barefoot, and it would help them keep balance. That invention made its way to China by the 5th century, and then it made its way across the Gobi Desert, the China Silk Road to Persia. Persians made the stirrup out of metal with leather straps, and that's where the Muslims got it. And so the Europeans were still fighting on foot, but the Muslims had these stirrups and scimitar swords, the curved swords, and their horses covered with armor, and they could charge 30 miles an hour, and the Europeans are just standing on foot with heavy metal swords that take two hands. And so in just 10 years, the Muslims conquer all of Spain. And then they cross the Pyrenees Mountains and conquer southern France. You read the story of the Battle of Bordeaux, which is a town in southwest France. Today they make wine there. But back in that early 700s, the Franks, where we get the word French, but the Franks had their army in the field facing the Muslims, and the Franks are all on foot. The Muslim cavalry's charging. They're at a full gallop. The ground is rumbling. The Muslims pull out their swords, and as they fly by on their horses, they slice them to pieces. They turn around for a second, go at them. They're all dead. In one pass, the Muslim cavalry annihilated the entire Frankish army. So Pope Gregory puts out a plea that anybody that could fight should join Charles Martel. And so Charles Martel, he's the grandfather of Charlemagne, he gets 30,000 volunteers straight off the farm, yet this is the largest army in Europe at the time. So if Charles Martel is not successful at stopping this Muslim invasion, they'll conquer all the way to Poland. I mean, it's over.
And so Bill, just a real quick, now, how long ago is this after Muhammad's death? I mean, this happened pretty quick, like within 100 years, is that right, of his death?
All right, he dies in 632 A.D., The Battle of Tours with Charles Martel is 732 A.D.
So we're talking
100 years. They go from Arabia to Paris. It's all a military campaign.
Unbelievable. And, of course, all the church in North Africa is now under Muslim domain. I mean, and there's still Christians there, but they're under great tribute, under great duress. I mean, but it pretty much annihilates most of the church in North Africa, does he not? I mean, Islam?
Right. And the jizya tax is so onerous, so heavy, that over a couple generations, the Christian kids are brought up thinking, you mean all I got to do is say, convert to Islam, I don't have to pay this tax anymore? And so gradually, the Christians would diminish and diminish and diminish until they're non-existent. And Islam only prospered as it conquered non-Muslim areas, and it would drain the life out of those areas, and then once the Christian populations had been eliminated, there was no tax base. Muslims did not pay taxes. Only the conquered peoples paid the taxes. So once all the conquered people had assimilated and become Muslim, or they were killed, there wasn't any tax base. And so that's why, as they're conquering, they call it the Golden Age of Islam. But once they're stopped at the Battle of Tours, and they just basically milk all the conquered peoples for a century or two, and then they end up getting poor again, and that's when you get the Turks. And this is the second big wave. So the first wave of Islam, we're talking about spring, the first Arab spring was under Muhammad and the rightly guided caliphs, and it conquered from Arabia to Paris in 100 years, and it was the largest political military empire in the world.
I interrupted you. Let's go back to this battle then.
So it's 732 A.D. Charles Martel decides that he doesn't like putting his men in a field waiting to be charged upon, so he puts his men on top of a hill in a square, 30,000 men in one square. And so the Muslims, from charging uphill, it looked just like a line, and they were used to charging right through the line, but they would charge in and get stuck. Meanwhile, Martel had planned for some of his men to sneak into the Muslim camp and free the captives, because they fought for religion, but they also fought for plunder. Muhammad said, you can have four wives plus as many extra women as your right hand possesses. They just don't have the status of a wife. They're like concubines and slave wives and so forth. And so, of course, the Sultan got a fifth. So many sultans had 1,000 wives. One sultan reportedly had 12,000 wives. And they have all these stories of the politics of the harem and the new wife is being shunned by the older wives and so forth. And anyway, back to the battle. As these women were being let go from the camp where they were being held captive by Charles Martel's men that snuck in there, the Muslim warriors look back and see all their booty being let go. And so they would get off the hillside and go back to the camp to try to protect their stuff. And the commander, Abdul Rahman, tries to rally his soldiers back to the fight. And he gets distracted and he gets killed. And now the Muslim warriors cannot decide who their next commander is going to be. They start bickering. And then they figure, well, let's just take our booty and go back to Spain. We can come back and finish off the Franks at a later date. And so that is the Battle of Tours in 732 AD, just 100 years after the death of Muhammad in 632 AD. If Charles Martel had not been successful in turning back their invasion, we would be speaking Arabic right now, because German, French, English, Romanian, all those languages would have never developed in Europe. We'd be speaking Arabic, like in Egypt, where the Muslims actually cut out the tongues of anybody caught speaking the Coptic Egyptian language. That's why they speak Arabic from Arabia in Egypt. And Charles Martel, horse he can find, learns how to make a stirrup, and 5 years later begins to win his first battle, and it takes 700 years of battles to drive the Muslims out of Spain.
Unbelievable. We're with Bill Fetter of the American Minute talking about the history of Islam. We're going to be back. We're going to go for a break just real quick. Don't go away.
Who's looking out for seniors today? It's not the AARP. AARP worked overtime to help pass Obamacare, the legislation that cut over $700 billion from Medicare. And AARP supports the death tax, which can rob families of over half their savings due to the death of a loved one. Seniors know that AARP would rather make millions peddling insurance products than support the policies that actually help America's elderly. That's why America's seniors count on the 60 Plus Association. For more than 20 years, 60 Plus has been fighting for the seniors that AARP has left behind. 60 Plus fought against Obamacare and continues to fight every day for its repeal in Washington. And 60 Plus is the leading national organization working to repeal the death tax once and for all, so that families can pass down their businesses and farms to the next generation, not the IRS. Stand up for your values. Join 60 Plus today. Visit 60plus.org or call 703-807-2070. This message paid for and authorized by the 60 Plus Association.
And we're back with Bill Fetter from the American Minute talking about the history of Islam. Bill, go ahead. We've got about 4 minutes left in the program.
Well, the interesting thing is that Muhammad and the rightly guided caliphs and the Umayyads and the Fatimids and the all these Muwayyads, all the Muslim leaders followed the example of being a religious leader, a political leader, and a military leader. And so ISIS today follows this example. And there was the second wave of the Turks, first the Seljuk Turks from around the year 1071 up until the 1300s, and then the Ottoman Turks, and they invaded what is today Turkey. But back then, Turkey was Asia Minor. It was the Byzantine Empire. It was all Christian. Matter of fact, all seven churches mentioned in the book of Revelation were all in Asia Minor, and they were all conquered by the Muslims. Ephesus, Colossae, Galatia, wiped out by the Muslims. And the most popular Greek saint was Saint Nicholas, and lived during Roman times, gave to the poor, and the Greeks would give presents on the anniversary of his death, December 6th. But when the Muslims invaded, they would turn the churches into mosques and trash the bones of the Christian saints. And so in the year 1087, the Christians moved the bones of their famous Greek Saint Nicholas over to Italy. And this introduced this Greek saint and the gift-giving to Western Europe, and it eventually spread and brought to America. And we pronounce Saint Nicholas Sant Niklaus, the Dutch pronunciation, or Santa Claus. But finally, the Muslims surround Vienna, Austria, in the year 1451. And this is when they conquer it and cut off the land routes to get to India and China. And so in 1453, it finally falls. And then in 1492, a guy named Christopher Columbus says, hey, the land routes to India and China are cut off by the Muslims. How about a sea route? And he sails, thinks he's in India, so he names the inhabitants the Indians. But Columbus would have never set sail over here if it had not been for Islamic jihad over there. Think of it. We would never even call Native Americans Indians. Columbus gave them the name Indian because he thought he was in India. And so Columbus would have never given them that name had he not set sail trying to find a different route to India than going through the Muslim land. So we wouldn't call Native Americans Indians if it was not for jihad.
And yet all this time in the Americas have been safeguarded from the invasion of Islam, the infusion of Islam. Until recent years with immigration policy in this country, which we'll talk about in coming programs. But We got about 2 minutes left, Bill. Finish us up here and then give us the information for your website and where people can obtain your books.
Well, the Turkish Ottoman Empire finally was dismantled after World War I. The leaders of the countries in the Middle East wanted to be friends with the West, and so they would dress in business suits and get rid of the fezes and the burqas, teach English in their countries. And so, like the Shah of Iran, they were wanting to be friends with America. But the Muslim Brotherhood was started in 1928, saying, stop being friends with the West. We need to get back to reassembling the Ottoman Empire, and then from there to conquer the world for Islam. And so these Muslim Brotherhood people would attack these kings and presidents, and we would have the West support them. But finally, our current president decided to switch and instead support the Muslim Brotherhood agenda. And so now we're abandoning these leaders, pulling the rugs out from underneath these leaders so that these countries will be taken over by the Muslim Brotherhood. And anyway, AmericanMinute.com is my website.
Bill, thank you so much for being our guest today. And, of course, you're going to be our speaker at our upcoming Freedom Banquet. That's September the 25th at the Villa Milano in Columbus. More information will be obtained at our website at ohioca.org. That's the Ohio Christian Alliance website. Bill, we're going to have you back on the program. Thank you so much for educating us today on the history of Islam. God bless you, my friend.
Thank you, Chris.
And again, you've been listening to News in Focus, a broadcast of the Ohio Christian Alliance, and we're glad that you've joined us today, and we'll be back with you next week at the same time. Meanwhile, you can listen to this broadcast and other archive broadcasts at our website at ohioca.org. God bless. We'll see you next week.
You have been listening to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, president of the Ohio Christian Alliance. To learn more about the issues that matter most to you and your family, visit online at ohioca.org. That's ohioca.org. Thank you for listening. This program is sponsored by the Ohio Christian Alliance of Akron, Ohio.